Waiting is a tremendously difficult thing because we know the depths to which it goes. Even in the midst of our own society that wants instant gratification, it seems like the things that farmers learn, that you have to wait for crops to eventually begin to produce fruit. We live in a world in which immediate satisfaction is always wanted, where anger is actually directed towards things like microwaves or not cooking the food fast enough. That was designed to be fast. And we want the traffic to be clear. We want the lines to be short. We want immediate gratification. Waiting is a hard thing, though, when you get into the deeper things of life, though. Even though we're not going to address that here today, the training of ourselves to be patient in the little things helps us to be patient in the much more severe things as well. It's the way in which God intended it, that we learn character and integrity not by performing well when the tough moment comes, but when honesty and integrity and clarity come in the little moments, in the little things in conversations with our kids. It all ends up adding up along the way, just as the little things add up to the health of a plant or a tree as it grows, and then eventually is strong enough to withstand the storm that comes along. But waiting, nonetheless, even if we've learned a bit along the way, is hard. And the story today describes, interestingly, two people who are waiting. The first is the obvious one, of course, the woman who had been suffering for 12 years. Spending all she had on doctors to come and to attend to her, looking for answers all along the way and finding nothing. In fact, the more she sought to find a cure, the more she actually put herself out to find relief, the worse it got. And one can only imagine how the pain of her suffering caused her to have great anguish in her waiting, waiting for it to be healed. But the other person who is waiting, interestingly, is the father. He has a very urgent request. He has a daughter who's very sick and who's very ill. And he comes to Jesus and pleads with him to come and to attend to her. All he's asking is for him to come and to heal her. And he gets an audience with Jesus. Jesus follows him, and what happens along the way? Jesus starts attending to someone else. Can you imagine his anxiety at that point? We're in an urgent situation. My daughter is sick, and Jesus stops a crowd to kind of pay attention to a woman with a physical need. I have a death need coming. This is serious stuff. I can only imagine how he must have felt in that moment. But Jesus is not at all hurried. He does this at a few other points in the Gospels in an urgent situation. He spends some time taking his time. And he has to wait for Jesus to actually make his way. And in the waiting, bad news comes. I mean, how devastating would that have been if we could have just got there sooner? Desperation from both of them, both waiting, though, on their own terms. One very long, a long, long time. One waiting and being told to wait in the midst of absolute necessary urgency. Waiting is a very difficult thing. Thomas Cranmer wrote in the Book of Common Prayer, a prayer that's said during Holy Week, saying, "Grant that we may follow the example of Jesus' patience." That's hard to do, isn't it? And what does he mean by patience? Patience is love for the long haul, Tim Keller writes. It is bearing up under difficult circumstances without giving up or giving in to bitterness. Patience means working when gratification is delayed. It means taking what life offers, even if that means suffering, without lashing out or giving up. And when you're in a situation that you're troubled over, or when there's a delay or pressure on you, or something's not happening that you want to happen, there's always a temptation to come to the end of your patience. You may well have lost your patience, in fact, before you're even aware of it. Can anybody identify with that? It's hard being patient when life isn't going well. What do we learn from this text? That in the midst of the waiting, there are three things that we need to always keep in mind. First, notice that both people take steps of faith here. It would be very easy for the woman to have given up and stayed at home when Jesus had come to town. It would be very easy for the ruler of the synagogue to, in the midst of the illness, just to consult some doctors. But they approach the one whom they think can help at this point. They approach Jesus himself. And interestingly about, they come from two different angles of approach. One is a woman's desperate attempt to touch Jesus. And if you'd known anything about Jewish law, you'd have known that a woman struggling with bleeding for all this time would have spent the last 12 years in a state of what would be called unclean. She would be ostracized from the community. She would not have the proper attention. She would, in fact, be someone who couldn't even approach a rabbi in a public place, which is why, interestingly, her whole thought was to quietly get this done and move away, not merely to get healed, but to avoid the pretense of breaking the law. She was unclean. She was separated. And yet, in the midst of something completely and utterly taboo, she steps out in faith and goes for Jesus Christ, hoping to be healed. On the other end of the spectrum is the synagogue leader. If you know earlier from the chapters in Mark, they have been colluding now to kill Jesus. They have joined forces with the Sadducees, people they didn't get along with at all, and the Roman authorities to take him out as early as chapter 2 in the Gospel of Mark. And the synagogue leader publicly goes to Jesus, who's already a marked man, and said, "Help me." Friends, some of the toughest things to do in life in the midst of our waiting is to step out into faith, to take some action, even if we have some bumps and bruises along the way. And it may, in fact, require that we wait, may, in fact, require that we trust God to see us through and to the end. But both of them took a leap of faith. They both stepped out in faith. They did not wait for the answer to come to them, but they went to the one who alone could provide the answer. It's an important lesson to be learned in life, that sometimes we think faith is just something that causes us to stand still and hope that a solution comes sitting down. Neither is true here. There are times that we do in fact need to wait, but we still step out in faith, to take a risk, to look to the one who alone can help us. You know, we all have our own discouragement with waiting, and I had mine for many years with my friends taking particular directions in life, and I didn't get married till 31. Didn't have kids till 33. And that was a long time of waiting for me. And it took a lot of crashes and burns along the way before that beautiful thing became a reality for me. I had to step out and get thumped a few times. But I knew that that was a prayer that I was hoping would be answered, that I could step out into faith and trust God to provide the timing, but to trust Him at working in my own life along the way. And I know that many of you could be, in fact, in a period of very long waiting. The call from this text is to continue to step out into faith, to keep praying again and again, even when the answer appears at times to be no, and to trust Him to provide while we await the answer. Desperation, desperate acts of faith are in fact a good thing. But the second thing in stepping out in faith that we learn is that the Lord usually does more than we ask when He finally answers. How many of you have had your prayers answered almost to the T of which you requested it? Doesn't happen that way, does it? At least it hasn't happened for me. And if you've had that happen for you, I'd love to hear that, because that would be a really interesting story. It usually happens in ways that He desires it. She just wanted to touch Him and get away. He wanted to stop and see her, to see her face, to tell her, "Your daughter, your faith has healed you." He just wanted a healing from sickness. What He ended up getting was a resurrection. Father could be stunned by this reality. Friends, time and time again, there are reasons why we are asked to wait, and it's usually because He, in fact, has something quite different in store, not in accordance with our wishes, but at the end of the day, when we look at it, has far more depth, far more power, far more compelling rationale for why it is that He provided in this way and in this manner and during this time. And when we see that, when we see that He answers in His own means, it does, in fact, cause us to trust Him more. Because truthfully, if He just answered in our time, in our means, He wouldn't be great. He wouldn't be infinitely good. He would just be a Pez candy dispenser, giving us what we want when we need it. But He is good. He is great. He is sovereign, which is to say that His will for our lives will always be magnified far greater than our wills for ourselves. Which is why in the third thing that we learn, if the first is that we are asked to step out in faith, and the second thing is that to remember that He usually does more than we ask, the third is this one sentence that sums it up. Said in the midst of what should be complete and utter devastation, He says this: "Don't be afraid, just believe." That's a whole lot deeper, though, than "don't worry, be happy." Don't worry, that's a hard thing to do. Anxiety can certainly take hold of us. Just be happy, even when you don't feel that way. Jesus says something quite different to us in the midst of our waiting. It's not that He doesn't want us to be bewildered, because we will. We'll be confused, we'll be frustrated, we'll be irritated at times. The Psalms are full of this kind of reaction to God's action, where the psalmist writes, "I don't understand what you're doing." But Jesus says, "Don't be afraid." It's a different thing than having it all figured out. He's just saying, "Don't be afraid." Fear is something that is devastating to faith. And John will write in his first epistle, if we truly understand love, we will understand that perfect love, what does what? Casts out all fear. That the more in which we grow in love, the more it begins to push out fear. But the more in which fear grabs a hold of our lives, the less we understand what it means to love, because love is patient, love is kind, love is gentle, love is long-suffering. Go to the whole list, 1 Corinthians 13. If we understand the nature of love, we will understand that the more in which we are immersed into it, the more in which we are immersed into the love for one another, the more we are immersed into the love of Christ, we begin to see that it begins to push out fear. And if we do this very thing, we allow the love of God to push this fear out so that we cannot be afraid, we are given the foundation on which to believe. To believe. To believe that as long as we wait, we still have a good God who wants to give good gifts to his children. That as long as we wait, we still know that he, in fact, is sovereign over our lives and promises, and we can hold him to his promise, to work out all things for the good of those who love him. But there's the key, that we love him. That, in fact, in our faith, we trust in the one who loved us first, and we step out in faith in loving him back. It's the hardest thing to do. But it's there front and center. Friends, don't be afraid, just believe. And it's a word that we need to hear over and over again in the midst of our waiting, because we forget it. We're human. But Jesus says to us, don't be afraid, just believe. Allowing us to again step out in faith, taking that leap, trusting that he will answer in his good time. May we not try to fix things so fast. May we not try to have immediate discontent. But let us step out in faith. Let us seek him. Let's ask him for answers. Let's ask him to move. But let's not be afraid. Just believe. Let's pray.